Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. Let's talk about Venezuela, guys.
Oh, yeah. Let's get light.
Yes. Some of our listeners pointed out that we didn't really tell the full story of Venezuela's troubles when we were talking at the end of last week about the fact that, you know, their country has been in economic collapse for years now, and America actually plays a role in that. I think we even mentioned that Lindsey Graham said that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants to turn America into a Venezuelan-style socialist disaster or something to that effect. So we should probably mention that America has played a large role in Venezuela's current economic situation. First of all, they have imposed unilateral and illegal financial embargoes, which cut Venezuela off from most financial markets. And these are illegal by international law. So it's causing even greater shortages of essential goods, including food and medicine, and it makes economic recovery basically impossible for them. And then there's also, you know, a big cause of their economic collapse was the 2014 fall in oil prices. And there is some speculation that that was the result of a U.S. and Saudi conspiracy to basically flood the international market with cheap oil, right? And super producer Anna Hosnier, this is something you talked about on your tremendous podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous.
Yes. If you go back to episode 4, we are terrible at this. We did discuss how Saudi Arabia is considered a swing producer of oil, and they basically wanted to take out Iran and America's oil. And America was doing fracking. That's how they were getting their oil. But
right.
Because also America didn't want Russia to have any oil power, so they teamed up with Saudi Arabia and were like, okay, yeah, fuck our oil too. And basically did it. So Saudi Arabia, they have so much oil, they can regulate the market. They only in 2014 had to sell for $7 a barrel while America was selling for $60 a barrel. So they already knew they could run the market, and they wanted to take out Iran's ability to sell oil. They wanted to take out Russia's ability to sell oil. They just wanted to run the market. And in doing so, they did, but they basically screwed over Venezuela.
Yeah, they bankrupted Venezuela.
Yeah.
And Russia and Iran all got hurt by it because, I mean, it was basically the Western powers realized that the non-Western powers, Venezuela, Russia, Iran, were kind of overly leveraged in oil. Like
also,
most of their wealth was in oil.
Africa as well, like Libya, Angola, and Nigeria also suffered.
Yeah, screw those guys. They've had it too good for too long, you know? Yeah, so I mean, it's a long-standing, and obviously America has a long history of meddling in Central and South American nations and just supporting any right-leaning regime over anybody who wants to share a single thing with the people. So yeah, it's not all just like, well, look at them. They really fucked this up. America kind of had its foot on the scale / their head.
It goes very deep because one of the reasons they wanted to screw Iran over is so they'd have less money to put into like soldiers fighting in Syria.
Right.
It's all never ending circle. Like all that screws over Venezuela, who's over here like, I'm not fighting anyone
right,
in Syria.
Like, we didn't fight nobody.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, shh, you deal with what happens to you.
Right.
It's wild.
Yeah.
There we go again.
It is wild. Yeah. Wild is now the word that anytime we say it in the office, we're like, whoa, we were right when we said people say that word.
I've never had less to add.
And what is your take on Syria,
what
Nick?
The hell are you? I can't imagine what y'all talked about last week where someone's like, we need more of that. We gotta
that
get to
was
the bottom.
Fun.
I missed the laugh. Yeah, there's no more laughing.
Right.
Oh, man. Well, that's depressing, but I'm trying to relate it to my own life and failing to.
It just sucks that Venezuela is a casualty of all of this when they're definitely, they have no stake when it comes to like global warfare.
Right.
Like, also, we just have a coffee.
They just have no chance because they also have a corrupt leader. So you just like have no chance.
Yeah, they've got a lot of things going on.
I was under the impression it was pronounced Venezuela.
There you go, Nick.
There we go.
There you go.
That's your way in.
Take it home with you guys. Venezuela, take it home.
The situation in Venezuela.
In Venezuela, no, mira.
It's similar to
La situación. Right.
I mean, they're trying to be self-sufficient, like cutting your own hair, for instance.
Oh, yeah. God, they're all nuts.
Right.
These people don't deserve oil. I don't know I didn't get the whole story.
So Cliff Sims talked about what Trump would be like giving tours to friends, politicians, or whoever got a tour from the president. And there are some fun details. Like, basically, it was all just him shading the Clintons and Obamas.
Yeah. That's what he likes to do.
Yeah.
He'll go around. Whenever people would come into the Oval Office, like, apparently there's this thing, like, if he had people over for dinner, it always turned into, you want a tour?
Yeah.
Like, right after. And they're like, oh, sure. And then go to
expecting
the Oval Office.
Expecting it to be like, this is where Lincoln rested his head when he came up
the
with
Bill the Bill of Rights is right there for you to look upon. But yeah, would go into the Oval Office.
This is President Tabloids.
Yeah, this is President Petty.
Right.
Going into the Oval Office, basically like gesturing, like this is where the scene, this is the scene of the crime for the Lewinsky-Clinton affair.
Right.
So it says, in a visit in 2017, Trump told a TV anchor, I'm told this is where Bill and Monica, stopping himself from going further. And then it says three other people who have embarked on a tour with Trump said he made similar comments regarding the former president and White House intern, laughing and making facial expressions. The subject often leads to lengthy, sometimes crass conversations.
Wait, so facial expressions being the blowjob facial expression?
I don't know.
He just raises his eyebrows up and down.
Right.
Like every just for 5 minutes.
Hey, you know what happened here?
It's
fun. What's going on over there?
That's where there's a
scream.
No one even knew there were sexual innuendos.
Right. He's just doing like chicken wing arm flapping. Like, right.
Like, I don't even know.
But yeah, so I think he had a record of making people uncomfortable somehow with his obsession with the Clintons and talking about their, you know, little trysts that were going on back there. Especially, I mean, the facial expressions really is kind of awesome.
Right.
But and the then, lengthy part is like, also they like, people are almost like, right. Okay. Like, can we, can I go?
Right. Also where Kennedy like dealt with the crisis of the Cuban Missile Crisis. You know, like all sorts of important things happened here, right, President Trump?
Yeah, there was that. I think Jack Nicholson and Mars Attacks.
Right.
When the Martians came, you had to deal with
that. I remember.
Dear
God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. That's how off-putting that man is that these people are getting a once-in-a-lifetime experience of a tour of the White House, and they're just like, I can't wait for this to be fucking over.
Right.
He's so awful.
And then with regards to Obama, he just, I think this is partially him like sort of projecting what his day is like, but he said that his favorite narrative around the Obamas was that they were bad tenants that put like holes in the wall, and that Obama sat around watching basketball all day.
Not racist.
No.
Racist, just a fact.
Right.
It's not racist if that's the deal. He's black and loves basketball all day and was a bad president.
He just sat in here and watched basketball all day. Yep. It seems like that's what Obama
was. And he
was
blasting that trap music or something. I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, he just said,
all day.
Holes in the wall. Also, he would repeatedly say, this place is in real rough shape. Like when he first got there.
Right.
Because I remember like his first sort of thing of like just trying to constantly allude to some fucking weird idea that the Obamas are out of control tenants who are just bashing the fucking walls in.
Right.
But yeah, and then, but it's just such a weird thing. Because then he brags about how like how small the TV used to be in there.
Right.
And now he's like, well, now I got, look, now it's big. Now it's gigantic.
Like, did you build the big TV? Like,
he clasped it's to like, join up.
Oh, so you made it better, so now you're in here watching TV all day?
Yeah, right.
Okay, well, you know.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger TV. I did want to bring up the redesign of the Pepsi logo, because Pepsi back in, I don't know, it was like 2007 or so, spent $100 million on having a new logo design.
How much?
$100 million. Several hundred million dollars, I'm sorry. Several hundred million dollars.
To go from the wavy thing to like the wave, more...
The guy's ass?
Yeah, yeah, that looks like it's a sunburnt plumber bending over with his underwear peeking out.
Yeah.
It does look like that.
Cool.
But so in order to make that transition, a design firm had to justify like how brilliant this change was
because
the Pepsi company.
Side by side, it looks like the most minimal fucking change.
So Gawker got their hands on a 27-page document back in the day titled Breathtaking Design Strategy. And it contains like all the references to the golden ratio, feng shui. There's like this thing that it has a x-axis that says convention to innovation, and then a y-axis that says DNA to the future. And it puts the like old Pepsi logo on one, and then is like the future is now with the new one.
That's merely to just like create the metaphor of what's there's nothing. Because when I saw that, I'm like, what the fuck is this? It doesn't even make sense in a mathematical sense.
No, they're just so foolish that they include the Mobius strip, the Earth's geodynamo, and then comparing that to the Pepsi logo. It's just...
Amazing.
The fuck do they think the consumer on this end be like, I fuck with it because they incorporate a sacred geometry into this?
Well,
it gets really good on page 7.
Their thesis is that like they're tapping into all this like
subconscious iconography
stuff like this is the future for Pepsi. But it's truly a remarkable document of like just how screwed we are as a species.
I was so confused when I saw Robert tweet it out and then I saw you retweet it and I just started looking through and I thought it was some kind of like bad scientific presentation that was just lazily using Pepsi logos because like the diagrams are way too excessive for like merely like a marketing deck.
Right.
That I was like, oh, this has to be some kind of scientific 300 shit.
And
I
stopped. Golden ratio.
Right. You just figured it was over your head.
Shui. Yeah, I did. Because I was like, oh, this is some other shit.
And then I didn't know that this was them what they were
justifying. Okay, yeah. I know you paid us $100 million to turn that little wavy thing into a more angular like brush stroke.
Right.
Oh, man, we're in the wrong fucking business.
I know, man.
Yeah. I could put together a deck like, oh, my God.
You got to lie more.
These people have cracked the code. Like, yeah. We need to look into what these people were doing during the 2016 election because they have cracked the code of how to just justify anything to anyone.
Yeah. God, I wonder if the Pepsi people who were in marketing that hired that firm were like in hot water. Like goes, hold on. What the fuck was that? We paid off. That guy was on coke.
Right.
And he just talked about space. We just wanted a logo redesign.
Well, I'm sure this document was the result of the company sending in a version and the Pepsi marketing person who was like, trust me, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars going back and being like, I'm going to need a little more than that.
Right.
I'm going to need a little more until it's just like the geodesic dome, man.
Right.
Like, think about it.
They're like, what?
The Earth's geodynamo.
Like, we just asked what's testing better with younger people. What the fuck is all this other shit? It's
6 hours later.
You know, I'm just looking on the internet as I do.
Sure.
But there was like this weird article about like space age coffee. And I look at it. There's a company called Space Roasters. Okay. And they're giving coffee to the masses, bro, because the way they're doing it is unlike any other process, right? Normally you roast a bean. And then you grind that up to make your coffee.
That
right?
sounds old and boring.
Yeah, because they're probably using shit like heat to roast it.
What are you, my grandma?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you guess what these guys are using? Fucking heat.
What?
Yeah. Also, but here's the hook.
Okay.
Space heat.
Oh.
Because they're using re-entry from space. Okay, on like a space vehicle re-entering Earth's atmosphere. And that friction from the re-entry is used to then heat the coffee beans to roast it. So what they do is they describe it as they have a space roasting capsule. The heat from re-entry will be, quote, distributed around 4 cylinders, each containing 75 kilograms of coffee beans, floating in microgravity. The beans will be evenly heated and roasted during the process. The capsule will then be recovered after landing with parachutes. Okay, when you're adding that detail, You mean you have nothing else to talk about. The entire process will only last 20 minutes, but will end with a marvelous aroma as the hatch is opened. Now, again, I do not know. They don't, in what I've read, I have not read anything about why space heat is more advantageous than terrestrial earthbound heat.
Because it's from space.
Right. Right, but that's, what the fuck?
No, it's more energy. How? Right.
More energy.
Yeah, in space.
Yo, you ever space espresso?
It's been to space.
Yeah. Space brew?
Oh, space brew.
I remember that was a thing. Well, I remember growing up that there was a thing where we had tomato seeds that they were going to take into space and then bring them back, and we were going to grow to see if they like changed at all. Did you guys remember that?
No.
Sounds fun. Yeah.
My sounds like a lie. My
teacher
stressed
told.
Out science teacher.
These are space
plan.
Tomatoes.
Oh, we're sending them to space.
Yeah.
Space pizza.
But anyways, I have always wanted my coffee to be toasted by the same thing that killed the Columbia space shuttle crew.
You have always said that.
I have always said that. The seven-member crew of the Columbia space shuttle, the thing that took them down, I want that to be roasted in my morning cup. So
that's good news.
It's just so weird.
It's like the Apollo 13 fire.
In the even the press release that inquiring minds would receive, like journalists, like some of the quotes are just like, coffee has been roasted the same way for centuries now, and as space science has improved many technologies, we believe it is time to revolutionize coffee roasting using space technology. I've not again heard that being suspended in gravity brings out other dimensions of flavor, or that this heat is different than other.
It's just good for the sake of change.
I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
It's but progressive.
Even then, so on Ars Technica, they tried to break down what this even costs. So you're saying you get 75 kilos up there times whatever. So they said, for the sake of argument, let's assume the company can launch a 500 kilogram capsule into a 180 kilometer suborbital trajectory, because that's how they envision 180 kilometer suborbital trajectory being the way that they achieve that heat. And they say, assuming all 300 kilograms of beans are roasted optimally, this comes to $20,000 per kilogram of roasted beans. There are between 10 to 15 grams of coffee beans in a cup of coffee. So even on the lower end, just for the rocket cost, that is $200 per cup of coffee.
Those are La Calam prices.
Oh my God, you're bleeding from your nose.
Is it bleeding again?
Oh no.
I don't know what that meant.
La Calam. Oh my God. You gotta. That's
that cocaine?
Those fancy. No. Oh. That's perico. Mm. That's what we call it now in the streets. the La Colombe is like that canned latte that Sophie always buys.
Oh,
and
right.
And she's always freaking out when it's not there. It's like, oh, we're out of La Colombe.
Yeah, that's right.
And now they have a few shops.
They have one in Frogtown.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. But yeah, what the fuck are you going to do? And then they're saying that's just the raw cost of attaching it to getting a space flight.
Right.
Because you're piggybacking off someone else's million-dollar operation.
Well, it's shitty coffee. That's the thing you have to understand. The beans suck. It's just Folgers. But it's been to space.
What we do is we get a 500-kilogram batch, and then we put a little bit of that. We spread that 500 kilograms over 10,000 bags.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just you, man. Right. But you're going to love it.
I mean, the most expensive cup of coffee I've ever heard about is the coffee with the beans that go through a bat's digestive tract.
Guano.
Yeah.
Or the monkey one, right?
Yeah. It's various beans that get eaten because they're seeds of fruit, coffee beans. And so they get eaten by the animal, shit out, and people pay huge amounts of money to make their coffee out of those beans that have been pooped.
Go on.
That makes more sense to me than roasting the coffee in a thing that's space reentry.
Well, because you can argue that their digestive tract is something different than just something as basic as heat.
That's the claim that they make, is that by going through the digestive tract, it,
but even then,
gets,
I remember
some strange thing.
I remember when we brought it up, and then every Zeitgang was on Twitter being like, "I've had it. It's shit. Also, the way it's made is problematic. It's bullshit." And I'm like, "Yeah, I get it. I mean, nothing about. I think it's purely for someone who gets so off on the idea that they're drinking coffee that has some kind of unique backstory." But I haven't even read where the fucking beans come from. I think that's more important than how you're fucking roasting them.
Nah, it's the roasting method, bro. Yeah.
At the
about
risk
the roasting method
of costing us $800 billion, take that goddamn beast, bat, monkey, whatever it is that eats the beans, put it in a space shuttle, feed it those beans, have it in space, then put it out.
Wow.
Right?
We figured it out. We've cracked the code. Yes. We're going to edit this part out. And
please.
You will never hear another episode of the Daily Zeitgeist because this is our business model going forward.
Again, I just have to bring up again, even through all their fucking materials, all of it is focused on how you just roast something with space heat.
Right.
It's nothing to do with the flavor or the experience of the finished product. And it just...
They don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
I don't get what you don't get, Miles. It's going to space. It's space heat. It's re-entry heat.
I know.
Have you seen Apollo 13?
I sound like the sober friend when these two guys who must have done so much blow when they figured this out. I'm the sober friend who's like, yeah, but what's different? Nah, dude. It's fucking space. The fucking heat is from space, dude. It's not like fucking fire, dude. Dude, fucking tell him, dude. It's fucking different.
You explain. Remember when Miles used to be fucking fun?
Right. Yeah. Jesus, guys. I just, you know, between that and your past, whatever, fine.
We'll be back in a moment. And we're back. Well, speaking of ill-conceived ideas... maybe not.
I don't know.
I don't know. Nitro Pepsi. Let's have our takes.
I mean, Catherine, resident food expert.
Yes.
Nitrogen. We use it for cold brew.
Yeah.
Craft beers, teas even. Yeah. Guinness, you know what I mean? And I understand nitrogen. There's smaller bubbles. They're finer. And they give more smooth taste. But for Pepsi, they're talking about like having a real creamy, like, luscious head on like every pour.
I feel like is not what Pepsi is all about in the first place. I feel like Pepsi drinkers
don't
want that.
It's just gonna be flat Pepsi, isn't it?
I mean, it's still supposed to be bubbles, but they're supposed to be smoother.
The bubbles are finer.
Yeah, and I feel like that's the type of thing that a food scientist who's in the lab tasked with coming up with new bullshit so we can have a new marketing angle, maybe they can taste the difference because it's like their job.
Yeah.
Right.
But does the regular person really taste the difference on something like that?
I mean, I definitely taste the difference between Guinness and other beer because other beer tastes like it has bubbles in it, where Guinness like tastes flat to me. Like
it's just smooth. It's, yeah, because the bubbles are finer.
Right. The bubbles are so fine that they don't even register as bubbles to my extremely sensitive palate.
I mean, the way they describe the Nitro Pepsi, it sounds more like a float, like a Pepsi float.
Right.
Like, sure. I mean, they call it creamy and stuff
like
that.
Which is odd.
Yeah.
But they're going to have a regular and vanilla flavor. But there was a blog post someone was pointing to about from the Deschutes Brewery in Oregon, basically saying that CO2 is acidic, so therefore it amplifies bitter sensations on the palate. Nitrogen doesn't. So since they're finer, it means the bubbles do less to, quote, scrub flavors away from our tongue.
Interesting.
So I guess that's why people believe CO2, to like traditionally carbonated beverages, to be more like refreshing because just the flavor goes away more quickly.
Is that crisp flavor?
Yeah, whereas like nitrogen just like hangs around a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Is that why flat Pepsi tastes like a nickel?
I don't know.
It
you drink
would
a lot
be.
Of flat Pepsi?
Yeah. Have you ever had flat Pepsi? It tastes a little like, it's got a little metallic.
To be honest, I've never had a Pepsi that was fully carbonated.
Really?
Yeah, I'm always just going around opening up people's flat bottles of Pepsi.
Yeah, that is true.
You do that.
Yeah,
I don't
weird.
Understand.
It's called saving a buck.
Pepsi. I don't know why it's...
Conceptually.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I understand that there must be people who drink it, but I feel like I don't know those people.
Right.
It was... Oh, who are Team Pepsi? Like,
yeah. Who likes Pepsi?
I was a kid. So the thing that Pepsi has, as opposed to Coke, is it's sweeter. Like, the taste is sweeter. And so I think when you're a kid, you're just like, fucking sugar, man!
Right,
yes!
Right.
Yeah.
And so I remember... at like preferring Pepsi to Coke, but Diet Pepsi is trash compared to Diet Coke.
Diet Pepsi will give me a seizure. It's so fake sweet.
And I think Pepsi, just in terms of brand, you know, Pepsi came along second and they pitched themselves as the basically their version of millennial, like the baby boomer
generation next.
Yeah, the choice of a new generation.
Yeah.
And they were like kind of, it was the cool thing to be like, I'm going to have a Pepsi instead of a
Hell
Coke.
Hell yeah. I remember the Spice Girls were in that commercial, and I was like, yeah, all
right. Right. But I do agree that they've kind of lost any sort of place in the sort of zeitgeist now. Like, they're just the people who sponsor our halftime shows or like big...
Yeah.
You know, they have big like branding plays they do, but really I don't know too many people who are like, we're a Pepsi family.
I posted an Instagram story about Panda Express, and I was like, also, why do they serve Pepsi products? And someone who works at Panda Express DM'd me and was like, we're switching to Coke soon.
Oh.
So I don't know if I just dropped a huge
bombshell.
And maybe they're just ruling it out in some locations, and who knows, maybe they'll change their mind, but that's what someone said to me.
Oh, because it's not like it's a Yum brand company.
Well, see, that's always the confusion. I believe that Panda Express is still independent.
Right.
But I do think that Pepsi probably makes all their money from selling to the Yum brands.
Yeah.
So like every KFC in Asia, which is the money-making ones.
Pizza Hut, Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, Panda Express is a family-run independent organization.
A family of pandas.
Family. Yep.
Mm-hmm. They're the sweetest pandas.
Uh-huh.
Really a home,
it
down
is.
Home
it's
company?
It is. Local to L.A.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we are the only people that have the
no,
panda?
No.
The owners.
Oh.
I was
just for us?
I was joking, calling it a family-run operation.
It kind of is, though.
Oh,
the
wow.
founder still runs it, I believe.
Well, look at me.
Oh, yeah. It's a fast casual restaurant. Yep. Founded by Andrew Cheung, mm-hmm. Peggy Cheung, and Ming Tsai Cheung. Cheerng.
Oh, wow.
Look at y'all, panda.
All right. I mean, man, think about how much money they have had to turn down over the years to resist selling that company.
Oh, shit. It started in Glendale. Okay.
Yep.
San Fernando Valley, what's up? We got the panda in the building.
I would have sold when, like, in 1990, someone was like, $1 million for your Panda Express. I'd be like, $1 million?
Cut to you spending the last dollar of that million and looking at Panda be a global empire.
Do you have any idea how many pogs I can buy with this? All right, guys, let's talk about Gwyneth Paltrow. Speaking of incredibly talented people.
Speaking of woke talented people.
Goop.
We got a couple of stories going with
Gwyneth
GP today. Yeah. So, first of all, she was involved in a ski slope hit and run, which that's
peak white privilege.
The whitest thing that's ever been said.
I was in a
said.
Ski slope hit and run. So, a doctor.
Yes.
Like, how white does that make you not feel? Like, you have a lot to achieve.
Yeah.
I know.
Can you ski?
I can't. I suck at it. I skied once when I was like 13, almost killed myself.
You were raised in a blue-collar house. Then. But yeah, in a Deer Valley ski resort in Utah, this doctor is saying that he was just minding his own when Gwyneth Paltrow smashed into him from behind, broke four of his ribs.
What the fuck?
He was knocked out. It had a brain injury. And he's suing her and the resort for $3.1 million.
Yes, sick.
You know what I mean? So this is from a quote. It says, according to Sanderson and his lawyers, Paltrow was skiing down the slope behind Sanderson when she let out a, quote, hysterical scream like King Kong. First of all, King Kong does not scream like a hysterical. I don't know what the fuck that is.
King Kong!
I'm trying to think of a sound that King Kong made during the course of the movie.
It's a
right. Yeah.
Which would be even doper if that's how
a video breaks and she's just
sounds
like,
premeditated if you ask me.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Crashed into him and then she landed on him. Then allegedly, Paltrow got up, skied away after the resort instructor accompanying her berated Sanderson for, quote, taking out Gwyneth Paltrow. This guy is saying he was legit concussed.
What the fuck?
Was laying face down in the snow, and then his friend was with him and was like trying to get him up, and the ski instructor's like, your buddy just took out Gwyneth.
What?
And then they fucked off together.
This is a perfect example of why you can't believe all women. That bitch. So it's that fucking bitch.
I always thought of ski instructors as being so down to earth and like chill, but yeah.
If anything,
skiing is serious. It's intense.
Yeah.
Well, so then they say after the crash, Sanderson's personality changed and he suffered memory problems as a result of his brain injury.
Oh,
he alleges.
God.
He told reporters that at times he, quote, felt mentally ill and couldn't function in the months following the incident. Then I don't know why they add this. According to Sanderson, Paltrow allegedly had lunch with her entourage and family and had a massage after the incident.
She was stressed out.
Yeah.
I don't blame her.
She's like, this dude got in my fucking way.
First of all, she was skiing, so she was hungry. Right. It builds up an appetite. And then she was like, I hit that man. I'm so stressed.
Right.
I get her story. Her story checks out.
Right.
But yeah, they're saying so now, but she is actually considering a countersuit.
Oh, shit.
You know what I mean? Because she was saying, he hit me.
Do you have any idea how bad this makes her look? That she almost killed this dude?
I mean, I don't know.
This is crazy.
It's just such a weird story of like people being like, because then the guy also had like some shade to throw at the resort. He's like, people on that at that resort, they don't know what they're doing.
Oh, damn.
They
don't.
They just want to look posh. Right. And it's like now you have like this level of like ski culture shade built into it. It's like, this is lames. Rich lames come here.
The only way to solve this is we got to get Judge Judy up in this bitch.
Oh, shit. Oh,
she knows how to cut through the bullshit.
This does seem like a Judge Judy.
Could you imagine her? Be like, sir, what's your story? Right. And then looking at Gwyneth Paltrow and you miss.
She's like, bap, 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 I wasn't. Bap, bap, I wasn't. Yeah. I didn't say you could talk.
She's probably more risk than Gwyneth at this point.
Oh, my God. Because
didn't she sign like some $200 million deal recently?
I don't know, but she has a fat ass. You ever seen her ass?
Oh, really?
Woo-wee.
What?
Wow.
Google it right now, Playboy.
Judith Scheinlin?
As a woman with no ass, I appreciate a woman with a nice ass.
Judge Judy butt.
Wow. Judge Judy booty.
Yes, she does.
Judge Judy booty. Look at Miles's. I wish you guys could see Miles' face.
What?
Wow.
You're welcome. Everybody at home. Pull over.
We'll take a moment for everybody to Google that right now.
Wow.
Google that ass. You should have Googled that ass.
Yo, she's sporting curves.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
Good for you. Jack.
It's sorry. Are we still recording?
Good for you, Judge Judith.
I know, man.
Wow. Live your best life, Ma. I'm not mad at you.
Anyways, I can
kind of...
Oh, you
guys really got thrown off. Focus, fellas, focus.
Baby, Judy. It's just a tongue roll. Judge Judy.
I do buy that, though, that, like, this, like, by the sounds of that ski instructor, like, it's a real, like, celebrity culture. Like, you got in Gwyneth's way, bro. Like,
right.
I can totally see that shit happening. America's such... star fucking culture.
It's true.
I'm surprised that there was a quote that the guy like poked him away with his ski pole. Like, you fucking poor.
Yeah. You fucking poor.
The fuck out of Gwyneth's way.
All right. Well, another thing that Gwyneth did this week is helped legitimize the presidential consideration or campaign consideration
of
Howard Schultz.
No, she did not.
She did.
What a fucking cunt.
So let's review Howard Schultz's week. He was on 60 Minutes at the beginning of this week, and he claimed that he was going to run as a third-party candidate to represent the silent majority.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Literally quoting Richard Nixon's racist campaign about how the silent majority of this country is, like, scared of people of color, basically. And then he had a campaign stop where somebody just shouted at him, "Don't help elect Trump, you egotistical billionaire. Go back to being ratioed on Twitter."
Nice.
Billionaire asshole.
Yeah.
Called him an asshole.
Oh, did he?
I would have retweeted that. Yeah.
Well, somebody censored it because that was
a direct
quote. Yeah.
At the Barnes & Noble thing?
No.
At another event?
In the quote
at
that
the
I'm
coffee,
reading
tea and leaf
from the source.
Coffee bean at Pete's Coffee?
Yeah. He would never enter.
Yes.
Someone asked him a question about would he tax the rich? And he was like, I don't want to get into hypotheticals about what I would do. It's like, bro, that's the whole fucking point of running.
Nobody's fucking with you then.
Yeah. Like, what? It's also just you're supposed to answer those questions. When people ask you those questions about what you would do as a president, no matter what the fucking subject
don't
is,
don't be slippery.
Don't be slippery. It's already proof that you know what the fuck you're up to.
He called the Medicare for All
un-American.
Oh,
but then he had to walk it back because everyone, like, he realizes, like, oh, shit, people want that.
Right. Yes.
And then he goes on the news.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's learning. He's learning what the people actually want.
As it's happening. Because then he goes back and goes, oh, I just want to clarify my statement on that. I didn't mean it's not American. I just mean it's not affordable.
Right.
Okay, my guy. Dude, and then he's like, well, you know, at Starbucks, you know, I gave people insurance, which is true. Like, he did help part-time people get insurance or whatever.
But then
to act like you're the king of, like, you know, woke healthcare policies and then being like un-American. Because then, he was on Morning Joe and they're like, how much is a box of cereal? An 18-ounce box of Cheerios. And he's like, I don't eat Cheerios.
Yes. And they just let him get away with that.
Right, and they're like,
$4. Okay, what cereal do you eat? That would be the follow-up question. No, they were just like, oh, it's $3.40. They were just like,
you should
so
have said name a
him.
Cereal.
Right.
Just name one. He's like, Fruit Hoops. I don't know.
Fruit
Hoops. Doesn't even know what they
fruit
are.
Fruit Circles. Red Circles. The colored circles.
So this is where we get to Gwyneth Paltrow because she has a podcast, a Goop podcast to improve the lives of women. everywhere with pseudoscientific
white
bullshit.
White women.
Yes. Terrifying. And as a testimony to just his decision-making acumen, he decided that that would be a good follow-up to his 60 Minutes.
Is a hop on the Goop podcast?
Hop on the Goop podcast. And to let people know that he means business. You know, like you might think he's an idealistic, like kind of full of shit.
CEO billionaire
because he thought that he could fix racism by writing, "Let's talk about racism" on people's Starbucks cups.
I mean, that was...
And asking his baristas. That did solve racism, actually, right? Haven't had a problem with racism.
Oh,
since
wait.
That.
No. The story before this confirms
right.
Good try, though.
But anyways, so he went on there, and Gwyneth Paltrow and he talked for a while about how divisive the rhetoric on both sides of political divide are. And Gwyneth Paltrow is worried about how that rhetoric will affect her kids. That's why you need me in the middle.
What?
Yes. They talked about hateful rhetoric that defines the contemporary political debate.
Is she worried, though, because for her kids that they're going to flame her kids for her acts?
Right.
Because they'd be like, wait, you're Apple?
Yeah.
I mean, I got something to say.
I think that is where a lot of this comes from, is that these people are, you know, multi-millionaires, 100 millionaires, billionaires, and they recognize that a lot of the rhetoric coming from the left is kind of hostile towards them because...
Right, because they're hoarding resources.
Right.
Hoarding resources from while people are starving
just
in
keep it simple.
The country. Just a quick excerpt from the interview. Schultz, "I'm drinking tea actually instead of coffee because I've got a cold." Paltrow, "Are you allowed to drink tea?" Schultz, "I'm totally allowed to drink tea." Paltrow, "You are? Okay, I guess they sell tea at Starbucks." Schultz, "Yes, we do."
Oh my God.
You know, that's
divisive.
Hard hitting.
This is really
shit.
Truly divisive.
Are you allowed to drink tea?
Right.
Getting to the bottom of shit. You know
that's
what I
right.
mean?
She was trying to see if he had a caffeine addiction.
Right. Yes.
Really, that's what she was
slowly,
getting down to.
Yeah,
she was
right.
trying to find out. Good for her. You know, she's really cutting to the important stuff.
Yes. He, by the way, also gives people bags of tea as gifts. Just loose tea.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because he's
Yeah, but when's the story going to break that he teabags bitches? So that's
right.
the story
right.
I wouldn't know about. It's inevitable.
So that's... So, that's Gwyneth Paltrow's week.
So Gwyneth Paltrow's hard-hitting journalism.
Yes.
Yikes.
I mean, I hope, you know, people think that he's a piece of shit billionaire who shouldn't be voted for. I think they'll get that, and that he's merely just trying to cut the line because he's a billionaire. He doesn't have to fucking actually win a battle of ideas to actually get the nomination. And he'll just be like, I'll buy my way into disrupting the election and maybe getting Trump elected. Although he really wanted to make clear, he's like, I would never do anything that would give Trump any kind of advantage.
Uh-huh.
But when you
Besides
look at it,
running.
I mean, if you look at it in very black and white terms, a third party candidate would only probably most likely help Trump.
But see, Howard Schultz doesn't see black and white. He's colorblind.
Right.
You know,
because I've ended racism at Starbucks.
Right. Yeah.
You could be mocha.
Right.
You could be macchiato skinned.
Right.
I just didn't think I'd see a Ross Perot situation.
Right,
right.
For 2020.
Yeah.
And here we are.
I mean, you'd hope enough people just get in his face and they're like, bruh, get the fuck out. Don't do this shit.
He's just so rich that I can't imagine that
right.
he would listen.
Well, because Mike Bloomberg, who's also another billionaire who's constantly thought about entering as a third party candidate, he was even like, yo,
I've looked
don't
at
do
it.
It.
I've done
he's
the
like,
research.
I've done it. You don't want it. Don't do it. And he's probably got beef with Mike Bloomberg.
Yeah.
He's like, he's a hater, so. I'll do what the fuck I want.
They fucked the same bitches, probably. Same
teabag.
Gwyneth.
The same
yes. Teabag the same mistresses.
Yeah. Anytime. Anytime I'm hopeful that he's going to have a moment where he comes to a realistic conclusion, I come back to that campaign where he's encouraging his baristas to have conversations about race.
My God.
It's an emotional issue, but it is so vitally important to the country. Was his quote: "If a customer asks you what this is, try and engage in a discussion. That we have problems in this country with regards to race and racial inequality. We believe we're better than this, and we believe the country's better than this." That's how he wanted to address race.
We believe we're better than this, the country's better than this, and we won't address it, and if we do, it'll be in the most passive way fucking possible.
Right. Yeah.
That's how serious this issue is.
Yes, that's the type of person we're dealing with.
How did he think these interactions would play out? That someone would go, what the fuck is this?
Wait, what is racism?
But that's the problem, is he's so disconnected. It's not like he has black homies, right, you know, that are having these actual real conversations.
He's like, well, I met Stedman once.
He's like, he'll have like the most basic conversations with people that are probably networking with him or trying to get something out of him.
Right.
So he's allowed to navigate those conversations because they're not trying to lose their connect or whatever the fuck.
Right.
So he thinks he's being productive. He's like, you know, I was talking down to Keith over there, my black intern. He told me it was a good idea, so I fucking did. And it's like, yo, he was trying to keep his fucking job,
he's trying to get a raise.
Right.
He's trying to be a paid intern, my man.
Exactly.
The only race I care about is the human race.
Oh, shit.
And he started weeping right there. And so I think we just need to get that saying out in front of the people, you know?
It's an emotional issue. If a customer asks, you just say, we have problems in this country with regard to race and racial inequality.
We believe we're better than this.
Yeah,
$4.65.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Also, who fucking... I haven't even had my cup of coffee yet. I don't want to talk about shit with anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Have you ever had a I mean, aside from like a local neighborhood coffee shop where you know the people intimately all the time.
Yeah.
I've never really engaged people unless I'm just fucking with them and just, you know, having fun or something.
Right.
Never like, yo, man, what's... how are we feeling about the
climate? They're all 17.
Right.
Well, that's who really is going to solve this issue. 17-year-olds with memes.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Well, in what is probably the technical opposite of stealing a bunch of teenagers' Taco Bell money, a corporation in the UK is giving back to their employees.
Yeah. It's Aldi, which is a German discount grocer,
German
but they operate in Europe.
Its UK stores had a record 2018, huge profits, and they decided to give some of it to their employees.
I can't believe this.
What the fuck does?
What kind of corporation are they sharing their profits with their workers?
But like, so what's their angle?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't trust it.
Right.
But apparently, you know, they're giving bumps that put them above what most would call the like a real living wage, according to like government. Like, when you sort of relate that to the government required minimum wage,
right?
They're going beyond that.
So how does that help their bottom line?
I don't know, man. I mean, the shareholders are probably pissed.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing that I wanted to flag this, because this is the slow slippery slope into socialism. And you know, we're trying to avoid that, you know, so Schultz 2020. But what's crazy, when you look at, they were sort of comparing like the wages of like, if you're a manager at this grocery store, their base pay is around £44,000. It's around $58,000. That's more than double what a new police officer would make in that area.
Oh, wow.
So good company to work for, you know?
It is.
And if I recall correctly, their wine is pretty good too.
Oh, really?
Just trying to get the cheap discount wine real quick.
Aldi. Okay. A story this reminds me of is back when like the economy was like going through the roof, like if you looked at the stock market.
You mean when Trump became president?
Right, when Trump became president and fixed the economy, it was going through the roof.
He's the best president ever.
Mm-hmm. And then it was announced that earnings, like people's average earnings were rising, and Wall Street got spooked by that. They were scared that people's earnings were rising because that's not good for the bottom line.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, the stock market went down. Like, that's our system, guys.
Right. They're like...
like, this story is, like, the sort of thing that would cause this company's stock to fall through the fucking floor.
They were like, we have no confidence in the management.
Right.
At this point of this
company. Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's the same shit, too. Like, a lot of people, when you think about all these... a lot of digital newsrooms closed up or had to do a lot of layoffs in the last week... you're almost like, couldn't the money have been found in your CEO pay, taking a smaller cut?
Wait, what? What?
I know, man. I know. It's that crazy shit. But it's those simple logic steps that I feel like more people need to begin sort of thinking about. It's
right.
Like, those people are gone, so the people at the top can maintain their check.
Right.
Right, but that's the problem with working in a capitalist society, right?
Right.
I mean, when you are employed by someone whose end game is just getting rich as fuck...
right.
Like, of course the bottom employees are going to get fucked over. I also just, like, I don't understand how anyone could believe that any kind of artistic job or any job in general is guaranteed. Like, that I don't get. It's like, unless you're trying to build your own shit.
Right.
Like, but I'm back to stop being motivated by money. Like, that's the problem with a lot of people, is they're motivated by money. And that's both at the top and at the bottom. You know, people aren't motivated to make themselves happy.
Right.
That's a real issue.
Do you sort of live in your sense when you say you're not motivated by money that you don't let that affect your decision making? Because if you keep your happiness at the forefront, your success or your abundance will occur just born out of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
And the money can come or will come, you know, if you believe. I mean, it's unique to me because I don't have family to feed, you know? So I don't shit on anybody who has to fucking do what they got to do to support their family. But, you know, when people are shocked that they would lose it, no disrespect to anybody at BuzzFeed, but it's like, yo, you work in art technically, you know, like our jobs are not easy to maintain for the rest of our lives.
Or like, justify to people who are like so numbers oriented.
Exactly. Yeah. And for, you know, the CEO to do what he did, yeah, it sucks, but that fool had a vision and then you essentially worked for him, so he gets to call the shots. That's what's fucked about it. Thank God in California we have laws to protect, you know, the vacation and sick pay that they're going to get.
Their PTO, pay time off.
But that's also part of why, you know, people have to unionize and get that shit going so that the government works to our benefit. But I think the problem is when people look at shit, like going back to what you're saying, it's like, okay, the stock market, they stop investing or whatever the fucking shit is. But it's like, who fucking cares what they think? You know, like if you're working like those guys are to make sure that their employees are taken care of, that's how you should run a fucking business and stop worrying about how people want to invest or don't want to invest, because it's like, who cares about those people?
Right.
Yeah.
The money will come.
Well, yeah, especially, or if you have like a company who's like, you know, their mission is to actually, you know, equally benefit the people who are putting the work in that benefit the people at the top. I'm sure that would motivate other people. If you're selling something, they'd be like, oh, I fuck with this. Right. Because it's not just going to the one dude. Like everybody's getting on from that purchase. Right. But, you know, I guess that's phase two.
Right, yeah, I think I'm very lucky because I grew up in a household where my parents started their own business, and part of the business was making sure they service lower income, you know, Latinos that didn't speak English, and anyone that was lower income. And sometimes my parents would accept pay however people could pay, a bag of almonds.
Right.
Wow.
They would be like, yeah, okay, that's what he does. So he gives us almonds. Oh, we got a guy who works, you know, for a winery, so they would give us wine, you know? Yeah. And I'm lucky that I grew up with that because I don't think that it's weird.
Right. Right. Rather than your mom being like, let's get you to this audition.
Yeah.
And tell them how good that flat tummy tea is.
Or just like, you know, having them be like, oh, we can't service you because you don't have $200.
Right.
You know, it's like, all right, let's fucking figure this out.
Right, right, right. They're like, you're a human being.
Yeah.
Right. I can respect your humanity.
Yeah. And I feel like that's lacking in a lot of business structure. You know, it's like, well, what the fuck, dude? What are we doing if we're not helping each other out? Yeah.
You said it right. The realest you one in the room.
I'm the woke bully, bitch!
There we go.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.